Welcome to Conspiracy Beer Me. I'm Justin.
I'm Shane.
And you are listening to the podcast that is making conspiracies fun again. Today we are talking about all things Afghanistan.
Oh, cool.
Under the rock and the missing treasures.
Oh, fun. That's exciting.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And we have a very special guest to do so.
We do, yeah.
Before we get to that, I'm drinking another Upheaval.
Me too.
It's an IPA from Hopfly, our wonderful beer sponsor. They have a brewery in Rocky Mount, North Carolina, right off Interstate 95. If you're traveling in North Carolina, go ahead and stop off. Or if you're on 85 going through Charlotte, pop into their brewery down in Mecklenburg County. Mention Conspiracy Beer Me. Tell them you heard about them here.
Yeah.
And other than that, we have a live moment coming up.
Thursday,
March 2nd.
That's this week.
Get your tickets while you can.
Yeah.
It can't sell out, but it's getting close.
Oh, boy, I tell you. If
it's getting there. Trust us. It's a lot of people. We're so excited about it. We've had a lot of fun stuff on the pod lately, so appreciate all you guys supporting us on the Patreon.
We had some patrons come by.
We did. They were, the bar for patron visits, extremely high.
It is. After this trip,
I mean literally high.
Yeah. Carlos and Tasha, thank you for coming by. You brought us taxidermy ducks.
We have real ducks in the pod now.
They might be listening devices. I don't know.
Yeah, we have a Chinese microphone company that sent us a microphone.
Yeah.
Which is definitely...
That's bugged, for sure.
It's definitely bugged. But we're going to use it.
Yeah, I tested it. I love a free mic.
Yeah, we're sponsored by a microphone company now. We're sponsored by a beer company. Mm-hmm. We have a moment coming out. Thank you guys so much. Everything's on clicking.
Yeah, it's nice.
Except my wallet. Stock trading is
brutal.
That's
not why
we
do it.
So we're good. Anything else we need to chat about? Oh, Spotify Premium. We love you guys too. You guys,
Patreon or Spotify, you're the one sign up.
So keep listening, keep telling your friends.
Yeah. Oh, this is a Patreon episode, isn't it?
Maybe.
Okay.
Not.
I don't know what it is. We'll find out. So good to get it all on there.
Yeah. Well, on that note, let's bring our guest in.
Let's do it.
Because we're going to talk about Afghanistan, which obviously most of you know because we've been at war. I don't know that we've been at war with Afghanistan for 20 years, but
we've been
in Afghanistan.
Yeah, we've been at war against a larger evil that is easier sold to us.
Yeah. We'll talk about all this with our guest, who not only is a comedian based out of Fayetteville, North Carolina, a little south of Raleigh, but he's also a veteran of the war in Afghanistan. He's a former Army Ranger. Please welcome to the show, Dennis V. What's up?
How you guys doing?
Hey.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, man.
Greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, so when did you first enter into the armed forces?
Right after 9/11.
So 2001.
Yep. I grew up in New York.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. My dad worked in World Trade Center.
Oh, wow.
My brother's cop, cousin's firefighters. 9/11 happened. A week later, I joined, and next thing you know, I'm...
So you wanted to help whoever did this?
Yes, it was personal.
So you didn't, right.
At that point, it was personal.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, but you didn't go after the U.S. government. You went after... We originally went to Iraq, but we also sent forces in October of 2001 to Afghanistan.
No, we did Afghanistan first.
Then we went to Iraq.
And then the whole... Weapons of mass destruction
came. That's right.
Debacle came out.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Right.
And that's when we found ourselves in Iraq.
Okay. Did you spend time in Iraq as well?
Yes.
Both?
Okay.
Yeah. So how, like in a given calendar year, how many months a year were you, say, in the station in the Middle East and how often home?
Okay. So with the Ranger Regiment, it was a 6-month rotation. So we do 90 days, mm-hmm. come back home for 6 months. Go back 90 days because that was a fast tempo operation.
Okay.
There was no hanging out on the FOB.
Right.
You were out every night. With the asymmetric warfare group out of Fort Meade, Maryland, they are now debunked. We used to go pretty much the same rotation, 4 months on, 4 months off.
Yeah. Okay.
And after that, I became a Green Beret and I was always gone.
Oh, yeah.
What is a Green Beret?
So there's this... There's this misunderstanding that there are these killing machines. And the fact of the matter is we're more of force multipliers. Mm. So you send 12 guys into a village. They create an army. Out of the village.
Oh, okay.
They give them ownership of their
battle. You give them guns?
We supply them. that's another whole different story.
Sure, sure. Yeah, yeah. No.
Because sometimes those same guns, you see them
back at you.
Back at us.
The next time around. Yeah.
So that's a thing. So yeah, I was gone pretty much for the whole 20 years. I'd say maybe 11. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow.
That's impressive. Yeah. And then eventually, were you coming home to North Carolina?
So originally, out of the 1st Ranger Regiment, we were out of Savannah, Georgia.
Okay.
Great town.
Oh, yeah.
Love Savannah, Georgia.
Great town. Great drinking town.
Great drinking.
Irishman.
Great spooky town.
Yeah,
spooky town. I was in Fort Meade, Maryland, out of the D.C. area, and then it was North Carolina since 2008.
Now, is there really as much of a pissing contest as it seems in the movies between, like, Green Berets and Navy SEALs?
No.
No, you guys pretty much respect each other.
Yeah, we worked a lot together.
Okay. So it's not as...
No.
Maybe in a bar playing pool, you guys get into it a little bit. But
You see that a lot when we go to different schools where you have Navy SEALs, you know, Army Rangers, things like that. Mm-hmm. It would be a lot of talking. But when we were overseas, it was one team, one
fight. Sure. Right.
You know, we used to share... Sometimes we even share the same team house. I was in Iraq. Shark base that was out of Ramadi. Mm. Yeah. That's where American Sniper was out of.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Around that same time. We shared the same base.
Okay.
Yeah. Same compound, went on the same missions.
Okay.
Yeah. I assume you get to that level, like you're past a lot of that young kid shit where you're like, like puffing your chest and stuff. Yeah. You're like, we're at the top of our class. We know what we got to do. Let's work together.
So it was a great experience with those guys.
Okay.
Well, good. That's cool.
Well, so then, you know, to what I said at the top of the show, you know, Operation Enduring Freedom began in 2001. It officially ended after like 20 years, right? 2021. And I think at this point, 2023, under President Biden, we finally have officially left all of our military presence is gone, at least officially gone. And I think some of that came with a recognition that maybe like nation building is not a great military objective. Like, I think we accomplished our military objectives in Afghanistan, but from a PR standpoint, like, we left with the Taliban in charge, and it seems like Americans can't even handle like match play in World Cup soccer.
Oh, yeah,
there's no winner in like a nation. You know what I mean? Like, did we win? It's like, well, yeah, but
kind of sort of,
but like, we did, you know, so it's like, we didn't beat Afghanistan, you know. Like, we don't own it now. Right, like, we can't go vacation there, and like we haven't turned it into.
They have
like
great skiing though, apparently.
No.
Yeah, Afghanistan. Ski Afghanistan is
really.
It's a thing. My friend who was in Iraq for a long time, he's like works with them. He's like a National Geographic Explorer of the Year, and he's done Ski Afghanistan.
They don't have a ski lift, do they?
Oh, I'm sure they do.
Really?
Yeah.
A ski resort in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
I know they do skiing on the border between Afghanistan and
Pakistan.
And Pakistan.
There are huge mountains.
Huge mountains.
Yeah.
I've never seen snow bunnies, though. But
covered, right?
She's got a burka.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
In my mind, I think of skiing. I mean, certainly the act of the skiing downhill is part of it, but it's the...
Well, it's not like a nice touristy spot. I think my friend, these are like ex-military people that go and like try to like spread awareness.
Every
for
time
skiing
I've
or
skied,
something.
It's like how drunk and high can I be and that still is, make it down this mountain?
Totally, yeah.
And can you catch the football?
Yeah. And like we stayed in a hot tub last time I went skiing. In fact, it popped up on my Facebook memories today, like. You know, it says like no more than 30 minutes. I mean, we were out there for like 6 hours, just totally drugged out of our minds, having a blast with people. I just don't see that happening in Afghanistan.
No. I mean, it's different place. Yeah, for sure.
Now, the hot tub and sauna thing does happen in Afghanistan.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It does.
So we had, we worked with another special operation force. They were out of Estonia.
Mm-hmm.
And they built a hot tub and a sauna room.
Oh, hell yeah.
I was like, okay.
Yeah.
It was just nothing but cooking hot dogs in there.
Oh, man.
No females.
Yeah,
what a gross hot dog to eat while you're in a sauna.
No one ate hot dogs out of there. It was a sausage fest.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You. Oh, man. Well, you know, before the United States was at war with Afghanistan, one of the fascinating things about it is it's basically been a war-torn country for hundreds of years.
They call it the Graveyard of Empires.
Because, you know, it goes back to a long-standing battle between the British Empire and Tsarist Russia. So pre-Soviet Union, two of the great empires were Britain and Russia. And they fought for like 100 years over Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why.
Well, now I do.
Yeah.
Now I do.
Well, that's one of the things I want to talk about is why. And then, you know, obviously after that and post-World War II, the Soviet Union during the Cold War was, I mean, in some ways, the downfall of the Soviet Union was their 22-decade war in Afghanistan.
Well, that was our strategy, right? Didn't we pull them into it on purpose just to make them, like, spend all their money?
Yeah, we financed a lot of the...
The Taliban and Al Qaeda. Yes.
So two separate monsters.
Yes.
I want to set that out.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Taliban and Al Qaeda.
Yes.
The Taliban were a political party.
Yeah.
They just had some jacked up friends.
I'm
going to make enemies with this statement.
Yeah.
As you step back and you see the geopolitical situation of it, you're like, okay, now I see what happened. Mm-hmm. Because there are many countries that foster terrorists. It just so happens that these were the worst terrorists that got fostered.
Yeah, for sure.
So that was a big difference.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Britain wanted Afghanistan because it was sort of the gateway to the crown jewel, which was India.
Mm-hmm. Silk Roads.
Russia wanted Afghanistan for the reason they want all countries, because they basically are a landlocked empire that desperately needs access to various seas, and that's the one pathway through. And so but also there's lots of speculation that there's more going on. I mean, it's a resource rich country. Yeah. I mean, it sits over natural resources of gas,
iridium's a big one.
Yes. Oh yeah, yeah. Especially with all the electronic cars
owned by our good brothers from China. Yeah. The Chinese owned them all. Which was kind of weird, because we'd have guys out there securing these mines.
Oh, weird.
But the Chinese own them, and the Chinese are building a road. From China through the former Soviet bloc, mm-hmm. all the way down. They want to build Silk Road around the world, they call it.
Wow.
And also, I mean, I think we probably all know this, but to the listeners, like, Afghanistan is the largest exporter of opium in the world. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's where the opium comes from, man. And
I have found myself in many of opium fields.
What does it look like, an opium field? Just
poppies, right?
Sure, it's poppies. Yes, yeah. Just poppies. It's actually beautiful.
Yeah,
I'd say.
What can you get a high just from being in the field?
No. You'd have to process it. So we used to do joint operations with DEA. It was kind of weird because one time, you know, you got a period of time where we need to eradicate all the drugs. Mm. Then another period of time where leave the drug farmers alone. They need to make money. So
it was a
weird rotation. But
sure. Yeah, that's how it is in Central America, too. The U.S. Army is always... And look, I'm not an anti-military guy. When it comes to the government and naturally growing drugs, I tend to side with the drugs. Yeah. I know that opium sounds bad. I know we have an opioid crisis, but we also have, like, a shit ton of opium in Fort Knox that we're protecting in case we ever need it. So I don't know. Is opium really that bad? I mean, I know it'll make you blow your uncle for a nickel, but I mean, like, what is the,
it's like everything else. It's what you use for, cause you have pharmacy grade opium.
Yeah.
The pharmaceuticals use it to create, you know, all sorts of different medicines. Mm-hmm. And
do you guys have it? Do you guys keep opium in, like, a first aid?
No, we kept fentanyl lollipops.
Oh,
fentanyl lollipops.
Yeah.
What's the street value on that?
Oh, brother, are you... yeah. You know,
damn, that sounds... What about a fentanyl blow pop?
One of the things, guys, you know, as soon as they got blown up and hurt and we're medevacing them, the first thing that medic would do is pop a fentanyl lollipop in them, and they're like, okay,
wow,
I'm good.
Shit, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, they're just like, this is great.
So, holy cow.
So that caused a whole another issue where... You know, there were guys out there not as honorable that replaced a lot of the fentanyl lollipops with regular lollipops.
Oh, no. Oh, and, brutal.
Yeah.
That's got to suck on your med vac when you hit a Tootsie Roll in the middle.
And you're not feeling anything.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's hope placebo effect kicks in for those guys. Jesus.
Yeah, I don't know why that we, I don't know why we care so much about, well, I look, I know that on the end of the drug chain, opium causes havoc in certain communities. I also know that pharmaceutical companies make sure that opium causes havoc in certain communities.
Of course. Yeah.
So I don't understand why, you know, so many people talk about the opium in Afghanistan, because all I want is legalized drugs in this country, and so I don't know why I would care about it being legal. Yeah.
I think the problem is when it goes from opium to heroin. That's the problem. Like opium, back when opium was around, people just had an opium bed. They just hang out.
Britain
people
did
chill.
Opium dens.
Yeah,
Britain.
Yeah. It was like, cool. That was a great time.
Why don't we get back to that?
I don't know. Didn't have to inject. You just
they got weaponized and sent. You guys have touched this on your podcast a few times, and like the rap music thing, it got weaponized to a certain demographic.
True.
And it created this culture of dependency.
Right.
Where, okay, they're never going to get out of this dependency. We got them where we want them.
Yeah.
But we created a whole different monster now.
Sure, sure.
Right.
You know.
And that's where I always see the pharmaceutical companies popping up when you start digging into these things. Because it's like, if opium in a safe, palatable form was readily available to the public, like, would it cut against some of the sort of big blockbuster pharmaceutical drugs that are meant to, like...
So, if they make opium legal, I don't think people are going to run and say, oh, now I'm going to do opium.
Right, exactly.
Now I'm going to do heroin.
Yeah.
You not know? Heroin, but I would do opium.
I mean, you'd have to set aside
a whole day, though. You don't want to.
Like, but a whole day for opium?
Yeah, you don't want to.
This is the best drug ever.
That's like time traveling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
like, I would love to take a drug and wake up 2 days later and just be like, what happened? That was awesome.
Yeah.
I mean.
That is the truth.
I'm having a bad day mental health-wise. So like,
you're like, just let me go to sleep.
Yeah, if I didn't have to work tonight, I would really be drinking beer.
This is really good.
It's good, right?
Hopfly makes great beers.
It's kind of like a barbecued beer.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah. It's got that.
It's awesome.
Got that smoky flavor.
Sorry. If you're not listening from the Raleigh area, which I know we have people all over the world, it's winter, but we were having a spring-like revival, which means allergies are just crushing me right now.
I woke up feeling I got punched in both eyes.
God, it's just brutal right now.
Yeah, my household, as I said, they're suffering right
now. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, I love the breeze, so I have the windows open. Oh, I'll be like, allergies be damned, I need this.
Oh, I biked here like an idiot. Yeah. I was just getting blasted in the face with Bradford pear nuts.
Oh, fun. That and the new malt smell. It's great out there.
Yeah, I just got teabagged by a Bradford pear, basically, the whole run here. Okay. Well, I want to, I know we're talking about why were these wars going on, and I have something that maybe you know about from your time in Afghanistan. I didn't know this until I started looking into this episode and kind of digging into it. But one theory as to why is one of the greatest lost treasures in history is in Afghanistan. It's the treasure of Ahmad Shah Durrani.
Ahmad Rashad. Whatever happened to that guy?
Hey, was he like the Olympic?
He was like a sportscaster. It's not his treasure.
No, not his treasure.
No, no. Okay.
No, this was a long time ago. He was the first modern ruler of Afghanistan.
Okay.
And he sort of lucked into this treasure. Like, some shit went down, and all of a sudden, he got this. He became the owner of this treasure because he killed some people. He was a military leader. And then he was cursed, and he died suddenly of face cancer.
That's a thing? Face cancer?
No.
Not skin cancer, just face cancer.
Just the whole face.
It's just gone.
The myth was that he was cursed, which I do think it's awesome that you could have been a shaman or a witch with a very basic understanding of medicine 400 years ago. Like you saw the symptoms and you're like, I curse you, your face. And it's just like you saw a boil on his chin and you were like,
King's dinner.
Then when he died, he apparently buried in Afghanistan a treasure which is now worth $530 billion wow. and still has not been found.
It's the Afghan version of Finnegan's Gold.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, which we covered. Yeah.
So, as far as that goes, here's what I will tell you. Mm-hmm. And it was put out there, then it was shut down.
Oh.
So, a few years back, they still have archaeological excavations out there. A few years back, you know, these archaeologists were digging around, mm-hmm. and they found these huge Buddhas.
Mm.
In Afghanistan?
In Afghanistan. Now, remember, in the beginning of the war, one of the first acts that the Taliban did was to blow up the giant Buddhas of Mazar Sharif.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they found these Buddhas. Now, the thing was, rumor has it, there were jewels, and that the carbon dating predated the story of the Buddha way before.
Oh, crazy.
So they locked that down, like everything else. It was put out there. It was thrown, you know, a few articles here and there. You could still kind of find it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, they shut that down.
Wow.
Yeah. That was always rumored to be, you know, that there was the Buddhas and...
Which Buddha? Yeah. Do you know which Buddha? Because sometimes Buddha is like... That real austere looking guy. Fat guy.
No, the Afghanistan's were. There's nothing fat in Afghanistan. The Afghanistan's were the austere ones.
Okay, yeah,
they were these tall. They kind of looked like sentinels.
Yeah, they did.
Those are
really cool. Such a shame they blew those apart. Yeah, it was so cool because those ones they destroyed. Apparently, they dressed them in wood outfits on top of the carvings they made, and it was this whole.
They were massive. They were huge.
Just stories and stories tall and the damn fucking...
Stories tall?
Yeah, they were huge. Crazy. Yeah,
they were stories tall.
Interesting, because that means that, you know, because Buddhism is a derivative of Hinduism, which just means that religious sort of story arc just stretched further into the Middle East.
Sure, yeah.
So, I mean, we have Pakistan,
mm-hmm.
then we have India. At one point, all that was one.
One.
Yeah, uh-huh.
You know, right. And the thing the British did was when they built borders, they just drew a line.
Yeah.
They didn't take into consideration tribal ethnicities.
No, right,
like that.
Right.
So, you know, where we see, you know, India, Pakistan, you know, genetically, they're the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But because someone drew a border,
right.
that kind of got separated. So you see, this is really weird.
Mm-hmm.
You see a lot of Persian influence up north because the Persian Empire pushed up.
Xerxes.
Oh,
Xerxes
yeah.
pushed, and they got and they got kicked out. Alexander the Great. You see a lot of Greek.
Yeah, Hellenistic.
That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
That's the SAT word.
Yeah, yeah.
Take the SAT.
My brain immediately went there when you started with it, and I was like, please didn't.
But so you had Alexander the Great. He got killed. You know, he got pushed out of there.
Yeah.
Genghis Khan,
mm-hmm.
the greatest warrior.
He tried to come into Iraq at one point all the way.
Yes, all the way down.
Yeah. 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 I think that like it's easy to forget that region, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and then further up the stans, the Kazakhstan, all those. I mean, the Soviet Union busted all those up and then divided them in such a way that it would sort of be like if you guys ever played Catan,
mm-hmm.
it's almost like they divided it so that like one country has all the water, one country has all the farmland, one country has all the timber, and so it's basically like all of you are going to constantly be fighting over resources.
Crazy.
Because we divided it not according to like, you know, how it, you know, like it was all once one people. And we just divided you amongst these arbitrary lines to make you constantly at war, which is why it's a war-torn area.
Yeah.
Because that's really the gateway between Asia and then the Middle East and then to Africa.
To Persia. You know, that whole Persian Empire, you know, it rests against the western part of Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, and then on the other side, you have Pakistan and China.
Yeah.
So, if you control Afghanistan, you control a lot.
Yeah, it's like the keystone. It's like without that,
everything very
falls,
much.
You know?
It very much is. It's
now.
Yeah.
The environment is your greatest enemy there.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you, You know, it's not a question of strong armies or weak armies. These mountain ranges and the you could go from conditions from, you know, it's 7 degrees here. We're going to go on a mission on a mountain and it's minus 40.
Oh, boy.
So, you know, there's.
How mountainous? You hear it's mountainous.
It's very mountainous, right?
It's mountainous.
And they're craggy as shit.
It is. Yeah, and these aren't like Montana mountains. These are.
These are like the Himalayan Nepal.
Yes.
It's the same.
Yeah, huge, yeah.
It's created by the same geologic event. Like when the Indian plate crashed into.
And you from the air, you could see where it looks like everything got.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That's so wild. Yeah, when we. So my wife's family is from Assam. And so we'll go to New Delhi and we'll fly to Assam. Okay. And we'll have the Himalayas, or the Himalayas, as they say, on the out the side of the plane
the
whole way.
Himalayas?
Yeah, Himalayas. Himalayas is how you're technically supposed to say it. But yeah, the whole.
Speak English.
I know, right? The whole. That range is so crazy from the sky. Because, like, we've all seen, like, the Rockies and shit like that. But these things are just, like.
Yeah, it's mind blowing.
It's crazy. Is. It's awesome.
I'd love to see that.
It's really cool.
Well, then, let me ask you about this, if you have any experience, because. You know, when we covered Iraq, I mean, that region, aside from being everything we've said in terms of importance of its location on the border between Africa and Asia, but it also is steeped in a lot of mythology. It's the sort of the cradle of civilization. Yes. We're talking about, some people believe it's the home of the Garden of Eden.
Garden of Eden.
It's also, Afghanistan has countless reports of really, really weird stuff. None as weird as Operation Post Rock. Do you know about the Rock? Have you ever heard of the Rock?
No,
maybe in Afghanistan.
Something else.
Well, it's in the Helmand
Province.
Province,
which is highly contested.
Yeah,
highly contested.
Highly contested. Mm-hmm. Shout out to my Marine brothers. They're the ones that guarded that down there.
That's exactly right.
So we operated down there, and there is. I'm gonna tell you right now. Personally, I know two. Things that just spook the living bejesus out of me.
Okay. Well, let's hold them, and let me tell you the Rock, because it's probably related. Is that the Rock is essentially a giant rock outcropping in opium land. So like it just sort of sticks out, and it's sort of strategically as if you were to go to the area, you'd be like That's where we want to be on top of, because we can survey.
So it's kind of like the Rock down in Australia. It's like if that was surrounded by opium, it's just this giant rock.
Right.
Like, that's or where the strategic point is. We got to get up there.
What's the one out west that was in close encounters?
Oh, you're talking about yeah.
Bear the one that
yeah. What's that?
They think it was a giant tree. You heard that?
I just saw that.
I've heard that.
Yeah. Well, that one.
I think it's more likely I mean, it could be, but the way the stones break off, it looks more like the houses of the Holy Cover.
Oh, it does. It does look like that.
Yeah. What is that place called?
Devil's Tower.
Devil's Tower.
It's not flat top like that, but it's sort of this giant outcropping, very strategic from a military standpoint. So the Marines go in there, and like almost immediately they're like, "Hey, something ain't right with this place." Mm. Locals say it's cursed.
Okay.
It's got a long history where like people are like, "Yeah, it used to be a fort, then it was a tomb." And they're like, yeah, we don't really mess around with that place. And so now people are like guys are stationed there 24/7, right? Mm. And more like Marines are coming out and being like, hey, man, you hear any voices when you're out on patrol?
Okay, so that I do know of.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The folk tale is that those are the voices of the past warriors that tried to take Afghanistan.
Interesting.
And if the Marines didn't leave, those will be the voices that their ancestors will hear, because they will die on that land.
Yeah, that's...
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, there was the smell of fresh corpses that would pervade the air, and they're like, I think at one point, the Marines, like, went in to see if they had missed, and there were just this labyrinth of tunnels and tombs, and they're like... So I think they collapsed all of that, and then still there were voices, and there was also, like, they would hear the sound of radio static.
Yes.
Oh, shit, okay.
Radio static and babies crying.
Babies crying,
babies
yes.
Babies crying.
Oh, my God.
So you hear a lot of that, yeah.
Yeah, and, like there were, I read articles where guys were like, yeah, at first it was, like, this very faint Russian voice, and then after you got, like, when you could hear it, then you were like, oh, it just comes every night, and you would just hear people talking in Russian.
Whoa.
And obviously there's not any...
Russians sure. around. So it's like, what is going on?
Yeah,
so like,
they used to say that's the voices of the of the failed warriors of the past. Yeah.
And have you heard anything like that over there?
So we've already, that one is a common one that you okay. hear, especially, you know, sometimes we used to go to Helmand, and after a mission, you just start, you start talking, and those stories always come up. So two stories. One, I will not name this person because he was a Delta Force guy who's still alive.
Joe Biden.
Not Joe Biden.
Joe Biden. Hunter Biden.
Hunter Biden. There you go. He's all sorts of forces.
Joe Biden did have a son who was military, though, right?
Yes. Yes, that was the one that Hunter married.
Hunter married. That's the weirdest story ever, but yeah, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
It's the great American tale of marrying your cousin.
I guess so.
Is that what that Bible Goes West was about?
That's exactly what it was.
There are no cousins in America. Yeah, okay, so, all right, so yeah, go ahead, go ahead.
So this guy is a legend in the community. Mm. He was a Rangers Ranger. He was one of that first class of Delta Force that did all the cool shit that we're, I'm sorry, can I say?
Yeah, you can. Oh, swear all you want. Yeah.
So
say whatever the F you want.
Did a step up. So he did all that stuff that we hear about today.
Sure.
Those operations in Grenada and Central America, yeah,
okay,
South America.
Okay, okay.
So he went on a mission to a very mountainous region. It took them 3 days to get to this village that was on a mountain.
Okay.
And then when he went up there, they got into this firefight. Once the round, they ran out of bullets because these people just kept coming out of the woodwork.
Mm-hmm. Does a firefight just mean you're taking fire?
It's an exchange.
So both sides are firing.
Yeah, you don't wave your hands. Got your bullets. Right.
You're
Thanks.
Trying to get firepower superiority there. Mm-hmm. You're trying to get the upper hand. So it's actually it's a game of chess.
Oh, that's fire. So somebody fires at you.
There are opportune moments for you to always use your weapon of greatest impact. Which is usually a 50 caliber or M60
I was thinking a nuclear bomb, right? Like, yeah.
It's kind of frowned upon. Tactical.
Yeah, it's frowned upon.
But, yeah.
So, okay.
You get that, you kind of get your guns to talk. That's what we used to call it.
Okay, yeah.
Get your guns to talk to where there's no lull in the fire, you know, but it's going to come a point where someone's got more than the other. And he found himself in that situation.
Okay.
They had more than him.
They just kept coming. They had more than them. It was a small team of four guys. So it got into the point where, okay, we're going to have to go fisticuffs with these guys. So they did what they did. Mm. The next day, they did a BDA, a battle damage assessment. Mm. And that's where, you know, it's very romanticized where people go to a battle zone and like, oh, he fired 50 rounds from this point. Well, they went up there to do the BDA, kind of get an idea of what's going on.
Right.
And they were evacuated. They were taking some of the bodies out of these locals that were killed.
Yeah.
Now, don't know if it's evolution. Don't know if there was something different. But when they did autopsies on them, they had hollow bones.
Oh, damn. Birds?
Like birds. When he told us the story, after we read the report, he said they weighed these were grown men that weighed like 90 pounds.
Oh, crazy.
Hollow bones?
Like hollowed out bones. But it was people say, oh, that's their body, you know, getting used to being in such high elevations.
No, that's not true.
That's not true at all.
Yeah.
Not how that works.
No.
So, we've always said that that was a whole him against the monkey soldiers.
Oh yeah,
but that was what one.
The monkey. Like
we used to call them the monkey. So there was a rumor out there, if you look it up, that the Taliban were training monkeys.
Oh, yes. Crazy.
Okay, the true story of that was that operation was that the Taliban were training the monkey people, as they used to call them, to fight against the.
Yeah, Americans. There have been lots of myths of a hybrid human
giant
like thing in that area for. All sorts of cultures have had reports of it, yeah.
So and one of the things I used to do, I started out as a special operations communication guy. So we used to go out to the austere areas, and we used to put these these, you know, audio-visual devices, kind of record them, kind of real-time, tracking and stuff. And sometimes we would put it in places where no one's going to get up there.
Right.
And then when we'd go to recover them, they looked like they were ripped right out, like someone just ripped them out.
Crazy.
Out of what? Out of
you know, the side of, you know, top part of a tree, you know, side of mountains, stuff like that.
How are you securing them, like with?
So that's going to go into tradecraft a little bit. I'm not going to discuss
that. No, it's fine.
But
secure.
We secure it, camouflage it. Things like that.
And so not like I used to go biking on the this greenway down the way, and some NC State had put like these wildlife cameras to film like coyotes on the greenway and stuff, and then like the guys that would walk the greenway and smoke weed, and when I say the guys, I mean like me, my buddies, like. You would go buy one, and you would just see where dudes had just, like, ripped it off. But it was just a pelican case zip-tied to a tree. So you're talking
this
about...
This was
legit. Yeah.
This was legit.
Yeah.
Three-letter agency, you know, developed.
And then it was just ripped off.
First of all, to get it on there was, you know...
Multiple guys.
Small teams go out there, and that's...
Yeah,
I understand.
We did that before going into an area. We'd send a team out. We put these in there, kind of monitor everything. Well, sometimes they will go out. We'd have to see what's going on. And they just look like they were ripped right off. And no Afghan was ripping anything off.
Wild.
Not these birdmen.
Not these birdmen.
Yeah.
This is a question. Like, if that one of those cameras catches you speeding, do you have to pay the ticket? That's one thing I've always wondered.
Well, that's
if you're cruising through the desert.
So hold up.
Because I know you don't technically have to pay it in the States.
So Afghanistan... I might be the only person that got a speeding ticket.
In Afghanistan. What were you driving?
Well,
land speeder? like a.
No, I was riding a Hilux, which is their version of the Toyota.
Yep.
That's another great thing about overseas is they get these vehicles that last forever.
Yeah.
All they put is like dirty gas in it, and it lasts for. Meanwhile, I got to take my car every 6 months.
Yep.
To get service because it's gonna.
What did it look like inside, though?
Inside?
In the side of a Hilux.
It's a regular Toyota.
Regular Toyota.
Leather seats?
Yes.
They stick us with planned obsolescence over here, but they're like, these people can't afford a new car. Just let them fix it.
Oh, okay.
So I was driving. I picked up our sergeant major from the airfield.
Yeah.
And I'm driving across a piece of...
Is he sitting shotgun or in the back?
He's sitting shotgun.
Okay.
He's sitting shotgun, and... We're driving, and the MPs had about 300 meters before the base, and then they had the base secured. So we're driving. This guy stops me outside the base, an MP, talking about, you were speeding. I said, yes, I do. I'm trying to get out of this war-torn country onto a safe speed.
Yeah.
So he gave me a speeding ticket, and I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this? He said, well, give it to your sergeant major. I said, okay. I gave it to the sergeant major. He ripped it up and said, go.
Yes.
I said, okay.
He stopped you.
He gave me a ticket.
Oh, man.
I can see there's a missile coming for my car right now.
Yes,
trying
right.
to outrun
you,
it.
Yeah.
Thank you. But there's a lot of weird things that happen in Afghanistan. One that we hear about and we've experienced it is lost time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In Afghanistan. Lost time.
Okay.
You know, you plan out these missions, and you got X amount of time, and you do the mission, everything is on time, and then when you go back, it's like, brother, where did those other 6 hours go?
Oh, weird.
You know, weird things like that. People say, oh, you're just delirious from not sleeping. And then my
I read that a lot.
Yeah. So it could be, but it's reported so much. Like, how many delirious people do we have out there?
Right.
Yeah, I read that lot in you know, with Operation Post Rock, which is this haunted rock. Like, the military's official conclusion is just sleep deprived.
Sure.
Traumatic stress, all the things in war that allow you to see and hear things that don't exist. But also, like, well, what? Maybe they're hearing things that really do exist, and it takes some sleep deprivation and some opioids to really...
There you go, sure. Like altered states.
Yeah. Did you talk about the gins at all over there?
So gins, yes.
Yeah.
Right, maybe you're getting to
I'm
this.
I'm trying to remember what... You mentioned the tunnel systems.
Yeah, the tunnels.
That is all over Afghanistan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yes. They have an elaborate system of tunnels.
So, Karez. It's called a Karez.
Yes, okay. Yeah, that's right.
So these Carezas apparently, as you know, people would tell us the tales were, this is how the djinns used to travel.
Oh,
they were, they weren't tunnels. They were tunnels for us, but they were,
there were tunnels.
That's below, what they used to do to travel to whoever, wherever they had to go.
Okay.
Taghab Valley. Taghab Valley was a place that supposedly was protected by a djinn.
Okay.
And djinns are sort of, you know, for those listening, are in the Muslim faith, they are the boogeyman, so to speak.
Yeah.
They're seen as a real entity.
Yeah, like a real
the
trickster.
Angels are, and but they are shape-shifting, malevolent. They can, they're not always malevolent.
No.
But they, in the Islamic world, you know, if your keys go missing, you're like, well, djinn probably.
The djinn took it. Yes.
Djinn took it. And then when you see a phantom, you know, like there was a cat here and then it's gone, it's like, well, it's just a djinn.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's so, pretty, it's culturally accepted over there. That's just a thing. So it's not like we're like ghosts. Oh, don't do
it. Yeah,
don't.
No,
they, it's just, so they full have, on believe. Yeah.
It's pretty weird because they, you know, with the exception of, you know, their dietary restrictions and their really strict prayer habits.
Yeah.
They're full of the same boogeyman spooky stuff that we have as a Christian society.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
The devil and demons and all
right,
and
right,
all that.
Right.
Yeah. And they live it. They do. Taghab Valley's one of those places where the women walk around with evil eye pendants, you know, to ward off. Which is that's a weird place. So you go to Taghab Valley. It's in a valley, of course. And we see everybody is, all the women are burqa'd out.
Yep.
We didn't see any kids yet. When all these kids come out, all these kids were blonde, blue-eyed kids.
Whoa.
The Russians
had
set camp there. The war was over. And they stayed there, not knowing the war is over. They were just like deserters. And they stay there. And so Taghab Valley's full of blonde hair, blue-eyed, beautiful people. And it's because, and these guys have been there for generations.
Crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. It was pretty wild.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, you go to talk to this guy thinking, you know, he's an American or fellow partner soldier. And it's a guy that's lived in Taghab Valley for four generations.
Wow. That's wild.
What's the weirdest thing you saw in Afghanistan while you were there that you can talk about? If you can't talk about it, I understand, but...
Me personally?
Yeah, you personally.
UFOs.
No shit.
Let's go.
UFOs, and this was in the Myanishan area of Afghanistan. That's in the Kandahar province.
Kandahar province, yeah.
So Myanishan's a small village full of bad guys, and it was pretty weird because we had this big operation, joint operation with the Navy SEALs that were a few hours away, driving about an hour away flight. We had this huge operation.
Huge meaning number of people? Or
logistics.
So logistics.
Okay.
Yeah. So the number of people always stay the same. We'll have about maybe tops, you know, three teams. That's 36 guys.
Okay.
Plus our partner forces that we send kind of forward.
The British. He's like, go take the bullets.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, this is your war. We
serve
just
him some tea.
Yeah. So
get out there,
this
Prince
whole
Harry.
Operation. One of the weirdest things was, you know, we were calling for fire, call jets, and we're waiting for the jets to come.
Mm-hmm.
But there were these bright lights always over. And, you know, people say, oh, that's Venus, that's Mars. I'm like, no, it's not.
Yeah,
don't know what that is, bro. Mm-hmm. But they would just stay there. And when there was nothing going on, they weren't there. It could have been satellites, but it was just so weird.
It was weird.
They always just showed up at that moment.
Interesting.
You know, I was, another episode, I was doing some research. I think like 62 miles up is technically outer space.
No, 93
miles up?
93 miles, as per what they taught me in communication school.
Interesting.
93 miles up is...
How, if something's 93 miles up, I mean, a satellite is, let's say, about the size of a small car. Is that fair?
That's fair.
A small satellite 93 miles up, it's a blip, right?
It's a blip.
It's tiny though,
and it's usually those are our geosynchronous satellites.
Sure,
that
sure.
Are always, you know, weather, whatever the case may be. But yeah, it's a blip, and you could kind of tell because it's traveling at a constant rate.
Constant rate.
Straight line, constant rate.
Never seen them part.
Right.
Always see them.
So you're saying it was something, was the thing you're seeing higher up or lower than that?
Oh, I'd say higher.
Higher and stationary.
It was kind of weird because it was so bright, but it was that type of brightness that, you know, it was bright from far away.
Yeah,
like the sun.
Right, that's what I'm trying to figure out.
It's bright, but we know it's far.
Right, yeah.
But it's extreme. It was the same thing. So wow. It was, you know.
But not the moon is like, how many, 20,000 miles
I don't know
away?
The miles.
It's way farther than I thought away. Even though it's still close, but like when you think about the outer space being 62 miles, 93 miles.
Well, the
moon's still way far.
Oh, yeah, it's so far.
And then Mars is like fucking like hundreds of thousand miles, million miles away.
It's very far.
I have no idea how many miles away anything is because it's so far. It's hard to fucking think about.
Yeah.
It's like going from Fayetteville to Durham. It's not that far until you're on the road, and you're like, "Wow, Durham's that far."
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Mars is not as close as we thought it was.
It's so fucking far away. Yeah, like going like. So I'm just trying to think like that's what I'm always fascinated by is, like a lot of times like you know if you're outside and somebody sees a plane, they're like, "Hey, what's that? What's that?" And you're like, "That's a plane," and I know it's a plane because I know where it, I know how far away it is, the speed it's moving. I've gotten better at looking at things that I think are like,
yeah,
that's satellite. That's
yeah.
There's a lot going on like right outside of the Earth's atmosphere.
Yeah, and you don't realize that until you're in like, especially you probably saw it all the time in Afghanistan.
Dark.
No lights no, anywhere. Yeah. It's like you're in a dark sky section of the world.
You can tell the difference between, you know, an aircraft, a satellite, you know, stars and things like that. You guys have heard of Lou Elizondo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
So Lou Elizondo was part of, I was part of the asymmetric warfare group with the word itself. Asymmetric is non-traditional, non-conventional.
Yeah.
So I did cross paths with Lou.
Oh, really?
In Afghanistan.
Wow.
2006.
Yeah. Okay.
I didn't know who he was.
Right.
So years later, and I'm like, that's what he was doing.
Oh, yeah, this guy.
Okay. Oh, so he was looking for stuff.
Afterwards, we learned that they were a separate branch that kind of, that's what they look for.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So I didn't know, you know, he came to our compound and we were like, who's this guy?
Whatever.
You know, the only bearded guys out there is usually special forces, special operation guys. This guy, you know, he comes out and he had his little team of misfit scientists.
Yeah.
They caught a flight somewhere else, but
wow.
You know, years later, I know what they were doing.
You know, one of the theories, the conspiracy theories about Afghanistan and the Middle East in general, is that there is something there. Maybe it's alien technology, a portal or something that most of everything we've talked about has all just sort of been a charade, so to speak.
For the bigger cause.
For the bigger cause.
The bigger picture.
Yeah.
That we don't know about.
That we don't know about. And you know, I mean, we've given some really good reasons. I also think that human beings, and therefore the people that lead us, are pretty petty people. So if we're just fighting over, like, resources and natural gas and access to the Red Sea, that could just be it.
Yeah, it could be.
But am I going to rule out a freaking Wakanda supply of alien metal somewhere
in
Afghanistan? I mean, I'm not going to rule that out because there's too many weird things going on.
Yeah.
They are one of the largest mines of iridium is in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. Which has become suddenly incredibly valuable.
So, part of that whole alien technology thing you're saying, they believe that Afghanistan is full of, you know, undiscovered resources.
Mm-hmm.
Minerals.
They also have, here's another thing, one of the largest natural gas.
Yes, huge natural gas.
I work in natural gas now.
Oh, okay.
And Afghanistan has one of the largest.
Well, crazy. You know, it makes sense that
these people need a break. They keep finding cool shit, and they're like, let me just invade you again.
You had a continental plate
that
essentially ran aground and got lifted.
Yeah.
So all the fossils or whatever that was at the bottom of that plate got sort of lifted up. So in those mountains, in accessible areas, is like all kinds of minerals and fuels that essentially are normally at the bottom of the ocean. But now they're like accessible.
Okay.
At least more accessible than the bottom of the ocean, because the bottom of the ocean is really hard to get to.
I mean, they're discovering things in the bottom of the ocean that aren't supposed to be there. You know,
yeah,
that whole little city off the coast of Cuba.
They did find that. Yeah,
they found the city.
Yeah.
But
there's like roads in the ocean. Yeah. They found like Bimini, legit. That's so funny because I was
Bimini Road. Yeah.
You know, I was driving recently, and because we talked recently about how if our society collapsed, it wouldn't take long before like everything went to shit. And I'm like, you know, that's true. And then I was like, you know what wouldn't go to shit is guardrails. Like, I was thinking about it. I was like, man, guardrails are solid metal. They're going to be there for a million fucking years.
You mean for like roads and stuff?
Yeah, no, I'm serious. Like, if you think about a mountain and like people are like, a million years from now are going to be like, we don't know what this is. It's just a metal ore that runs alongside this. Like, that's what we're finding is we're like, I don't know what's going on, but it's just, like guardrails are going to be here way past concrete, way past every wooden house, brick house, every electronic. We're going to have these like lines of fucking metal
going from coast to coast,
everywhere, and they're gonna be like, "We have
a train system for giants."
Yeah, we're gonna have no idea what it is.
Yeah,
maybe that's what we're seeing is in Afghanistan.
Things we can't understand.
Yeah, yeah,
just ancient shit.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, I could buy that.
It's not not called the graveyard of empires for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah,
that's a really good point.
And it's not, and again, it's not because, you know, Alexander the Great or the Persian Empire or Genghis Khan came across a more dominating force.
Right.
Afghanistan was that dominating
force. Yeah, yeah.
And Afghanistan protects itself. And it's protecting itself for a reason.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to be here. So you come here, the people aren't going to kill you. Afghanistan's going to kill
you. Right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. And this is a shout out to the Afghanistan. Like
what's that? It's like a Gaia thing. It's more like that. It's the Earth or that the location itself is doing that.
That's Avatar.
The
word.
Yeah.
I heard a quote, and it was from somebody during the Soviet battle. Was like, essentially, the Afghanistan people. And shout out to you. They were like, we would rather be poor and free than to be a puppet of any other country. Like,
they sound like Americans.
I don't know, man. I mean, Americans are pretty beholden to, I mean.
Well, I mean, the original ideology of like, I'm getting out of Europe's rule. I'm going to be my own thing. It's like they've always been that rebel society of just like, fuck the man.
All the misfits.
Well, the Island of Misfit Toys.
Yes, except that America is the least independent nation in the world.
No, I know. It's what we hold as an ideology, but unfortunately it's not.
The Afghanistans are like, they're living it.
Yeah. They are.
Cubans are living it, and they're suffering.
Yeah. There's no Finstagrams in either of those countries, because they're like, this is my true life. They're like, this is what we're doing.
Yeah, there's no memes in Afghanistan.
No,
there aren't. So it's pretty strange because Afghans are, I worked with this gentleman, this guy must have been like, so here's the thing, they don't know when their birthday is.
Oh yeah, my wife's family doesn't know.
Born January 1st.
Yeah.
All of them, January 1st. Yeah. So this dude, he looked about 80 years old.
Yeah.
He was a colonel in the Afghan Special Operations.
He's probably 10 years old.
I'm 40. I'm 14. Like, bro, he's like, I'm 40. I'm 48. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You lived a rough life. Anyway, we were talking. He was a young lieutenant.
Oh, wow.
When his mentors were Russians.
Holy cow.
So Afghans will not fold, but they will wait you out and suck you for everything you've got.
Yeah, that makes total. I mean,
that's a good
kind of what they did to America.
Yeah,
they did. Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, they did.
They had the ghost soldiers of Afghanistan. You ever heard that?
Yes, I have.
With the. Mm. they had whole armies of non-existing soldiers.
Yeah, I heard of that.
And
yeah.
someone's collecting
money for them. They
good
were
paid because they got paid
yeah,
good.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
We're talking.
They would send troops to go fight regimes of soldiers that didn't exist.
Yep. That didn't exist. And they were just they would make up battles.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, this
they
is
will
smart.
Suck you dry. Afghanistan will protect itself.
It's very smart.
I mean, look. What was the, remember the guy in the Princess Bride that was like, never start a land war in Asia? I mean, it seems like he's talking about Afghanistan. Like,
most definitely.
Don't go to war with a war-torn country.
No.
Because they will win. They will survive.
Fiercely independent.
I mean, they live in shit huts already. You know, it's not like if we were attacked, now, you know, as spoiled as we are, oh my God, we don't have central air my internet's out. got nothing.
Yeah.
So when you come in and you leave, they have the same thing.
You know what Afghanistan, you know what Afghanistan's sort of like in that way? Is and we've talked about it several times on the pod, is, you know, there's an island off the coast of India that's this like...
Oh, Sentinel Island?
Sentinel Island. Is essentially like... The people there live like 1,000 years ago. They have no technology. There's no electricity.
Are those the cannibals?
The
missionary?
Yes.
Got it. Yep. And like Afghanistan is essentially wants to be a landlocked Sentinel Island, which is essentially like don't like.
Yeah, just let us be.
Let us do like. I know that like we don't let women drive, but like
they drive now.
Well, they do.
Yeah, they do.
But I have. I like some of our ideology in Western society. Like, do I think that our ideology is perfect? No. Do I think that it's so good that we need to force it upon everybody? No. But sometimes it feels like ideologically that's what we want. We want Western ideals. We want a fast food restaurant in Afghanistan because we know once you eat our fast food, you are going to eventually be as lazy and as terrible of human beings.
Or is it we're just like sad people with low self esteem? Like if you like KFC, you'll like us. Then you'll be friends.
We like you light bone people. We want you fat and heavy.
Like you say, you know, pushing not everyone's meant to be on a Friday afternoon drinking beer having a podcast.
Right. No, that's true. I
like my life. You want to be a bird man, you do it on your own. You live in the desert and be a bird man. The only problem, the difference between Sentinel Island and Afghanistan is Sentinel Island is off the coast of India, and you don't have any reason to go there.
That dude didn't have any reason.
Not at all. That guy, he chose
it. He chose it. Afghanistan, unfortunately for Afghanistan, is strategically located in a spot that world powers are going to continue to say, you know, we want to be your friend or we want to be your enemy.
That's China right now.
Yeah,
China. They own so much. They own so much of Latin America.
They own a lot of America too. Like a lot of the housing. I know. That's
there's like
our
three Chinese restaurants on my block alone.
And they probably own all the housing around you. Yeah, it's crazy.
I say leave them all. I say look, leave them all alone. Leave them all alone.
Now the problem with that is, you know, and I'm gonna go back to 9/11. 9/11 happened, and it was over a grudge over a war. That happened way before.
Right.
You know, we have to let things go sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, you know, those guys that flew the planes, first of all, none of them were for Afghanistan.
Right. Yeah. Saudi.
And they were talking about old things that happened when they were kids. Mm-hmm. I'm like, brother, you weren't
even.
You
let it go,
man.
You
gotta let it go. And that's what's happening in Afghanistan now is there's this whole generation that. Here's another thing I'm going to go back to.
Sure.
Funny story. Kind of not funny, but we would capture a guy and we would do a
waterboard?
Biometric.
No.
Biometrics.
I'm kidding. Okay.
Never waterboard nobody. That's
not. You never did that officially.
Aquatic assistance.
There you go.
So we would register biometrically with retina scan, DNA.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So, and this is in a database that's. Got everybody that's ever been in a situation got scanned. So my name is Major. He's Lieutenant Colonel Martin now. Mm-hmm. Colonel Martin was a major. He went on operation. He was a captain. Went on operation early in Afghanistan. We're talking like 2002.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
He was part of that original contingency of 12 12 men, 12 strong.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
First guys that went over.
Yeah.
Oh, so, shit. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they
yeah.
started registering people way back then, mm-hmm. you know, enemy combatants. Anyway, we're going to fast forward to 2012. Capture a guy. There's a 98% hit of, you know, of a match.
Sure.
And, you know, this, it can't be the same guy, because the guy that this happened to was, you know, he said he was 40, but he was probably like 60. This kid was maybe 15.
Oh, weird.
That was his grandson.
Holy cow.
This kid is fighting a war that he has no idea.
He's just fighting. Crazy.
He's
fight.
Just fighting to fight.
That's yeah. his high that's, school homecoming
that's
game.
That's his thing. That is, that's that was crazy. Pretty wild. And yeah. that happens a lot where, brother, you weren't even born.
Yeah, this isn't your fight. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But there's this larger contingency in Afghanistan. Those people that were born after 9/11. It's kind of like now. Mm. These younger generations don't have an understanding what 9/11 was to us.
Right, yeah.
Like, we don't really have an understanding of Pearl Harbor.
True. Well,
over there, you got a lot of these young Afghans. They're like, okay, I want a cell phone, and I want skinny jeans. That's,
right.
That's what I want.
Yeah, yeah. Me too.
I don't want you in skinny jeans.
I want people to see my cell phone through my pants. That's yeah, the whole point of skinny, skinny jeans.
I want to put it in my front pocket.
Yeah. But yeah, that was pretty wild. That's a big thing is
yeah.
that whole transition of, bro, you're fighting a war that has, you know,
yeah.
nothing to do with you anymore.
Also, right. time, I would assume time. You think time goes faster or slower there?
Afghanistan?
Yeah.
Oh, it went by slow.
Yeah, real slow, right?
Oh, my.
So if you're thinking about that, if time goes that slow, then maybe it is their fight. They're like, oh, we're still in this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, whereas we move on to things so quickly with a society that's like every 10 seconds we're looking at something new.
Yeah, that I could understand. Mm-hmm. But if you were born 5 years after the initial invasion,
yeah.
and all you know is free money, free food, free internet, because they got free internet,
yeah.
all that stuff.
They have free internet in Afghanistan?
Yeah, we used to supply them with internet.
Wow.
And cell phones.
Well, it helps democracy. Helps democracy if you have, you know.
You have
what better
free encumbered access, unencumbered access to the internet. It helps democracy.
Well, I would disagree. Think so. Oh, you think it disagrees?
So,
oh, well, based on how America's turned out, I think it's divided us worse.
You know, I think yeah, I think the internet is
well,
terrible
I think
for
if
democracy.
If you give people the internet, if you give them the first 3 years of the internet where everything was golden, then you're like,
I can see.
You know, I'm not saying now, funny. I'm saying, but I think for them, like, that's new technology. Yeah. Like, the world
the
is
internet's
so
like
open.
A girlfriend. And, you got to date her for a very specific amount of time
yeah,
and then
yeah,
leave her.
Then so, get out of there.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of Cuban Twitter?
Oh, no. For sure.
Is it like Black Twitter, but Cubans?
So Cuban Twitter was that's the street name for it.
Okay.
It was an operation by the State Department.
Okay.
They handed out thousands of cell phones.
Okay.
Free internet. All these people had, but they were also sending program messages.
Okay.
You know, right. kind of like, if you were free, you can see this concert. So it wasn't even like, rise up against good. Your country.
Right, right.
It was just like, look at what you're missing.
Oh yeah.
I'm sorry, you're not a paid subscriber. You can't get it.
You know when you click a box to see an article in the U.S., it's like, by clicking this box, you agree that democracy is superior to human government.
Oh, we're so
sorry.
Then
your fucking family's dead.
Yeah, it's brutal. That makes sense. That's why they give internet. That's it's like, because we can track it all. We know what they're up to.
Exactly. That's why I think it's terrible for democracy.
Yeah, I get it now. I was an idiot until I had it. See, that's the thing.
Internet's horrible for sex
it
lives.
Is. Internet
for what?
For sex lives.
Sex oh, is lives.
It? Yeah.
It's just in terms of pornography.
I think you took a hard right turn there. I mean, like we were.
You said the internet is a bad thing.
Oh, I think the internet's horrible. Yeah, I want to be Amish.
No, I don't want you to be Amish.
You know what, man? I can build a barn. Watch out.
Whoa!
Man. Well, just give me a hammer.
Sex life in Afghanistan.
A lot of okay. Now that is a very
touchy subject.
Touchy feely subject.
Yeah,
because
it's a different.
So so something that was the hardest part I'm gonna tell you, besides what we did in pulling out of Afghanistan, was the U.S. government sent down a memo and said, "Hey, look. Their culture is their culture. Don't get involved."
Oh, that's tough, yeah.
Now, when you know there are 12-year-old boys that are being used. They call them the dancing boys of Afghanistan.
Oh, boy.
Governor, you know, police chief. There's a story about a police chief and a governor getting into a shootout and killing each other over a 12-year-old dancing
oh
boy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So that sex, the way they see it is, while these, the ones we came across was procreation is necessary, a boy's a pleasure.
Wow, that's wild.
That's old world.
That's Roman thinking. That's like, holy cow.
But yeah, man, women are not, yeah, sex over there is like, you know, we make fun about, you know,
take the burqa off, I guarantee you. Let them dress.
I say just give them blowjobs. Women, the war would be over if they just start sucking dick.
Oh, they don't do that?
I don't think they do anything.
Oh, man.
Not the women.
The boys all the time problem.
Oh, brutal. What a tough life. Yeah.
It's bad. And there's a good case. He was cleared of all charges. Major Goldman. He was a third group guy out of Fort Bragg. Anyway, he put hands on either the chief of police or the district governor because of that.
Oh, wow.
And then he got relieved of duty because he went against the
memo that says, the memo that says,
yeah,
you know, let them do what they're going to do.
But I get it. If you're like, you know, get the fuck out of my face with this bullshit, I'll do, you know.
You know, especially if, you know, we did what's called village stability operations. It was 12 guys, 12 guys with a handful of infantry soldiers for security, 12 guys in a village that you're not welcomed, and you have to win them over.
That's tough.
Because you want a footprint. You want to extend your footprint.
They call that village stability.
Yeah, VSO, village stability operations.
What's the dumbest term for anything in, like, village stability is a...
That's a dumb one.
That's a dumb one, but, like, what's the dumbest one that you... Where it, like, has a really glorified term for something that's really sort of, like, simple.
Kinetic strike. Kinetic strike is a good one.
Is that just punching dudes in the face?
That's what you think. Yeah. It's sending a $2 million bomb to kill three guys on a donkey.
Yeah. But it doesn't explode. It just hits you with
it's
the...
It's a kinetic
just
strike.
Lands on
it. Like, what are you doing, bro? This
is a kinetic strike.
You could have went up with a bat. Italians with bats. They could beat them up. Kinetic strike is a good one.
And that's pricey, too.
A $2 million kinetic strike ended up killing a strategic partner.
That the government's been pursuing, and you're like, I could have done that
with a bat
at the bar last night.
Yes, pretty much. Yeah.
Did you guys consider, as a village stabilization, doing any comedy shows?
So, no. But,
great question.
Yeah.
So they, in Kabul, Kabul's a more, you know, cosmopolitan.
Yeah.
They had Afghans that were starting to try to do
comedy. Oh, really? That's amazing.
Really?
Yes.
That's great.
In Kabul,
at the hotels.
Nice.
They have hotels?
Yeah.
So everything.
I mean, it's not
so
like,
wherever the embassy's at.
Man, Justin's
hotels.
Showing his.
Well, okay, but here's my point. Who's coming there to stay?
People travel all the time. Yeah.
So, yeah. So you got a lot of embassy staff. You can't house them all in the embassy. They live.
I get that.
Well, you got.
That's not a typical hotel.
No, but also people travel within the country.
They're nice hotels.
Yeah, they're good. They're like 4-star. Yeah.
In Kabul, they're pretty nice. Like I've been to a few of them. Not to say you could get alcohol there, but if you were to get alcohol, that's where you would get it.
Yeah.
At the hotel.
You couldn't get it, but you could get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know how to work the.
So they.
The guy called the hotel the maitre d'.
The concierge.
Yeah, you call that guy. He gets anything.
Yeah.
I had my interpreter, Nassim. Yeah. Thank God we were able to get him out of Afghanistan.
Oh, good. Yeah, I was just going
to. Were able to get all of our interpreters out.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It was a busy time.
Yeah.
A lot of cell phones, a lot of calling people that owed you a favor from years ago.
Oh, I'm sure.
So
yeah.
Friday was our day off because I contracted in Afghanistan as well. When I retired, I worked for the State Department for 3 years. Mm. So Nassim was my interpreter, and he would say, "Mr. Dennis, let's go to Kabul on Friday. I'll show you good time." I don't know what kind of good time you're thinking, but I'm gonna roll with you.
Okay.
So he took me to the hotels where they had the beer. Well, I'm sorry.
Okay.
If they had beer and alcohol. Johnny Walker would be something they love to drink.
They love whiskey over there.
And I don't know how safe this is. Russian vodka from the original invasion.
Holy cow.
That stuff is...
It's like 50 year age.
Oh my
God. That's amazing.
It's horrible.
I'm sure it is, but man, that
it's so delicious. Yeah. If it was.
Yeah, yeah.
So he would... Nassim was a shaker and a mover. He had a taxi. He was interpreting.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah.
So he knew where everything was at.
Yeah.
And he took me to this one hotel. And he was like, oh, they have guitar show and funny man show.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, funny
man. I want to do a
funny man.
Yeah.
So there was, you know, it was all in.
Did you ever go to a comedy show in Afghanistan?
No, I didn't. But he said that's where the funny show is.
Oh, that's fun. I would love to see what that's like.
Yeah, I would love to see. That's on my bucket list now. I'd like to perform in Afghanistan at a funny man show.
As a white guy? Okay. Well,
I'll do it, man.
Yeah, would it go well?
So just because we're not there, like we're the only ones that decided not to stay.
Oh, yeah.
Like there's a lot of countries that have contingencies still in Kabul on a diplomatic, you know, because the Taliban extended that.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, look, we're a legitimate government. Mm-hmm. We extend that the diplomatic relationship to you. I mean, they've had an embassy in Qatar for years.
Yeah, they have.
So, you know, and it's rough to kind of befriend someone that you kind of don't trust all the time, but that's politics.
That is politics.
Politics is different than, you know, war.
Yeah.
When those two mix is when we have issues.
Yeah. That.
Fair play. Wow, man. This is a... I think that there's so much here in terms of like the region in Afghanistan specifically as this sort of mysterious, territory that has, legends of giants, of UFOs, of space portals, of minerals, and it's all of it. And then the experience of Americans there confirms it there's like something's going on. Whether that's the ground is just sort of catching radio waves, and then we're just hearing voices that are essentially like the land just conducts because it's got so much metal in it, which would make sense why the military wants to be there, because there are these rare minerals that now, I mean, we're fighting with China over, developing mining operations on the moon. Those are the same minerals that are in Afghanistan.
Oh, so it's wow. Like, okay.
Yeah.
So all of that just combines to just make this a great story.
It is a good story. I'm going to tell you, the time I spent in Afghanistan and Iraq and Middle East, it was an experience I wouldn't trade off. I lost a lot of friends to combat, to suicide, whatever the case may be. That's another thing for another day. But I would not change that experience at all.
Yeah.
Good times, bad times, nothing.
Man.
Wow. Well, man, Dennis, really, really excited and thankful to have you here.
This is great.
I appreciate you guys inviting
me. Man.
One of the
awesome.
Most interesting episodes I've ever, been a part of. I'm really glad.
Appreciate that. Thanks.
My final thought is, let them sit in an island, man. If they want to, I take that back. Just put a ski resort there.
Yeah, ski Afghanistan.
This sounds awesome. Let's party. Let's party there. Like, let's do it.
Man. If you see Afghanistan pre, theocracy.
Oh yeah,
it was a happening spot.
It was. Yeah. It
yes,
was great.
The Middle East was at one point.
Yeah.
Party town.
I mean, Iran's still a party.
Yeah.
Love to party.
Yeah, we just don't see it.
Yes, Iran makes. Iranian food is my favorite food. I will say that. It's very strange, but I think the Iranian food is...
Who serves Iranian in Raleigh?
Niamon.
Persian
food is my favorite food. Yeah. We don't like to say Iranian because it sounds bad, but like...
Oh, I just didn't... I didn't know if Iran had a certain food that
Lebanese.
Was... What's the onions with the... it's the mouja.
Is it pink?
No, it's the brown with the caramelized onions and the lentils.
I know what you're talking
about. My favorite.
I don't know the names of stuff. I just know when I see it.
Yeah, Niamon and Sassoul, so good.
Yeah. Iranian food I love.
Mm-hmm.
I like that cuisine. That's my favorite. I would marry an old Iranian woman.
Hell yeah.
If there's any old Iranian women listening, I will leave you Leave my wife for you.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's amazing.
I'll take care of you.
Hell yeah.
Just cook for me.
Just cook for me. That's what you got
to
do.
Yeah. Well, I'm already married into the Middle Eastern cooking culture, so I'm going to stay with my wife.
That's good.
Yeah.
Is that your final thought?
No, my final thought is, I'm going to keep my wife. No, my final thought is, well, thanks for just sharing your stories, man, and thanks for your service over there. And I know that I have friends that have served over there, and it's always interesting to hear the stories. And a lot of times you don't hear about, you know, some of the weirder stuff, you know, because one, a lot of times you're just like, I don't want to ask them about their time. If they want to tell me about it, they'll tell me about it. So it's just, thank you for sharing.
I appreciate that.
Your stories.
Thank you guys for inviting me.
Yeah,
no, absolutely. I
appreciate it. Good time.
Yeah, I'm from a military family, so I'm very pro-military, but that doesn't mean I can't have qualms with the military. It just means I support military people.
Yeah, you should have qualms. Yeah. You should, you know, there's this whole culture where we've become a culture where we're trying to make our military into a Spartan respected force. Mm-hmm. No, you're a tool of the government.
Yeah.
Once your time is up, that is it.
It.
Stop going to Denny's for your $10 right. off. Yeah. Stop wearing your 9/11 yes. t-shirts.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, your yeah. Wounded Warrior program. Those are all great things, but leave it alone.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And there are those that do it, they can't let it go. I'm one of the ones that I was able to let it go.
Yeah.
You know, I said, I wouldn't change it, but.
Yeah. I think that to take that a step further, that it's not just that we have Denny's that gives you a 10% off. It's
also,
that,
I just found that out. I'm about to enlist because I think I go straight to officer. 10%. Yeah.
10%.
Yeah. I'm old enough to where they're like, we're not putting you anywhere.
You're a general.
Just go sit in this office and eat your
Denny's. I'm just here for the pension. When does that start? Next week?
Yeah, I want my Grand Slam breakfast.
No, please. My point is that all that sort of romanticizing of the military, it actually inhibits the actual help for people that really need it. Because it's like, well, you get 10% off at Denny's. It's like, no, we need medical
care. Yeah, yeah. Can we
get hospitals and stuff for our military and our civilians?
And free pancakes.
And
that should be the least.
It's there's a lot of challenges, but you definitely have to kind of, at some day you got to leave it alone. You can't carry, that's a heavy load.
It's so, yeah, it's a huge burden for sure.
Wow. It's a huge burden for a lot of people. And I've been lucky to fall into a community of comedians that, you know, have a good time. We laugh, we joke around. You know, and you will never hear me out there be like, well, I like Marines. I'll tell you in the first 3 seconds, you know, that was a part of my life that I did. I'm proud of it. Mm. I enjoyed it. Now it's time to move on.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
No one owes me anything.
Mm. You did your job.
A day's pay for a day's work.
Right.
You know, that's what it is.
Yeah.
So
also, that's how I see it. You're going to be on Earth a lot longer than your time in the military. So it's like, it doesn't help. I'm sure that lots of people that got out of the military right at the start of the pandemic feel like that was just yesterday. Like, I quit a job, and I'm not comparing my job to the service at all. It's just like those 3 years, I still feel like I lived at that job. I think about that job constantly, even though it was just 3 years ago, because it felt like yesterday because of the pandemic. Right. So I assume that like the transition for a lot of military people would be harder after the pandemic.
It's a transition. Yeah. I went through it.
Yeah.
I went through it to where it was, you did not want to be around me.
No.
Yeah. In the middle of the pandemic, I was looking to get another contract to go work in Africa.
Sure, sure.
I was like, forget about this America stuff. I like it overseas. Yeah. But, you know, I have a 17-year-old daughter now, and I got time to, you know, all that time that I did not spend with her.
Right.
You know, I got a few years to spend with her. Which
you got
was
it
awesome.
Now. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Good. Yeah. Well, then, you got a final thought, or do you want to? Wait, before you get a final thought, where can people find you?
You guys, everyone on, of course, Instagram or Facebook, you can find me with The Locals Comedy or Dennis_V75.
All right.
I always post my shows, forward people stuff there.
Excellent.
It's a great time. I'm an older guy, 52. I'm just discovering that this internet is not just porn.
I know, right?
There's other stuff you could do with it.
Man, man, that's so funny. My wife, she came to me like a few days ago. And she's like, hey, did you know there's porn on Twitter? And I'm like, Why do you think I'm on Twitter?
Who do you think I care what Elon Musk says?
I know, right? Like, the whole big deal about Twitter is, I was like, yeah, of course I know that. You know? She's like, yeah, it's really dirty. I'm like,
yeah. Yeah, we know, yeah.
Yeah, are you just figuring this out?
So, yeah, that's why I'm not on Twitter. I don't need that in my face every minute.
But yeah, you can find us on social media, locally. Instagram, Facebook. We're kind of building up the comedy scene down in Fayetteville.
Nice, good, good.
We really, and I'm not saying this because I'm on your show, we'd really love for you guys to come down.
That would be awesome. Hell yeah.
Love it.
Patty's is a great room. Mm-hmm. The Sweet Palette is an open mic we have once a month where it's a real audience. Do you know how open mics are? Usually you have your comic friends.
Like, not laughing or not watching.
No, no, you have a real, you know, the open mics we do, we do host, we have real audience, so you get real feedback.
Awesome. That's awesome.
So we'd love for you guys to come down.
Well, we will. Yeah. For sure, man. That'd be awesome.
Man, that's great. Well, thank you for coming on the show. Is that your final thought? You got a final thought on the topic?
You know, it's just one of those things where everyone, you know, it's one Afghanistan, 20,000 different stories.
Sure,
yeah. Everyone has a different experience. Yeah. Yeah. My Afghanistan is different than my buddy's Afghanistan, right. You know, so forth and so forth. And that goes for war in general. You know, be thankful to those that were able to come back, the ones that deserve it, or the ones that recognition, or the ones that didn't come back. Mm-hmm. So it's, and I'm going to step back a little. I appreciate, you know, how veterans are welcomed. Mm. I really do.
Yeah.
But it's a bit awkward. For me, it is. Mm-hmm. You know, that whole thank you for your service thing. Mm-hmm. It's like,
Yeah.
Would you thank an accountant, you know, thank you for counting my numbers?
I do have to raise your love.
It's a day's job for a day's pay. That was how I saw it. Yeah. Mine was personal. Mm-hmm. Along the way, my thoughts changed because 9/11 happened. I thought everyone from the Middle East is a bad person.
Right.
We need to get rid of them all. But in a 20-year span, I've learned so much.
Sure.
And I've made some great friends, Afghans, Iraq, people from Iraq, different countries, and it kind of shows you we all have the same issues. Mm-hmm. All they ever want, no matter where you're from, all you want is to take care of your family.
Yeah.
That is it. That's it. Your little safe spot. Mm-hmm. Everything else we do is for us. So, and they got that same plight.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
across the board.
Yeah, we're all the same people, no matter our ideologies, I think.
Yeah,
just want to be loved.
Well, man, this has been one of my favorite episodes in a long time.
Yeah, it's been great.
And hate to call it, but we have to.
That's it.
This has been Conspiracy Beer Me. I'm Justin.
I'm Shane, and this was
Dennis V.
Peace.
Peace.
That was great, man. Thank you so much.
You guys were awesome.
Yeah, you were awesome. That was great.